item on our agenda deals with finance and budget. But before I call on Regent Brody, who is chair of the Finance and Budget Committee, I want to make a comment about our budget process, which is something that is ongoing as far as the Board of Regents and as far as Western is concerned. A vibrant university is a living and breathing entity. It is composed of innumerable moving parts, all with one purpose: to provide an education for its students in order to equip them to do well. WKU is just such an institution. It is not stagnant. It continues to move to greater heights. One of the important functions of such a university is to prepare and implement an annual budget. We regularly review this process. WKU's budgeting process is more transparent and engages more stakeholders from across our campus than ever before. The budget review process is discussed in open forums such as Staff Senate, Faculty Senate, and Board of Regents meetings. These are accessible venues for any member of the public or media. Board of Regents budget documents are made available prior to each meeting on the Board of Regents website and remain posted indefinitely. Our budget development is a decentralized process involving input from not only the university senior leaders, but also representatives of Faculty and Staff Senate and the Student Government Association. Voluntary budget workshops are made available to all Board of Regents members prior to approval of an operating budget in order to educate and inform the Board of Regents about the budget before it comes before the board. The university has a budget executive committee made up of faculty, staff, and student representatives who meet weekly to review budget documents and provide input into university expenditures. All open records requests are promptly responded to in a thorough and orderly fashion. The Office of Media Relations provides timely information to answer inquiries regarding the budget and has provided numerous opportunities for the media to meet with President Caboni, other university administrators, and members of the Budget and Finance Committee who sit over here. All this for the purpose of asking such questions as they care to. WKU's budget review process is robust and transparent. More information is being shared with regents, faculty, staff, and the public than ever before. During President Caboni's tenure, initiatives have been implemented which are designed to increase transparency and engagement. The financial landscape of higher education is challenging. Despite this, we have achieved positive outcomes such as increased retention, increased graduation rates, and increased net tuition revenue. WKU's metrics tell the story. Our budget is not prepared in a vacuum. Our success is not achieved by accident. President Caboni and scores of dedicated professionals, such as Susan and her team, dedicate considerable time to reviewing budgets and ensure fiscal responsibility. Our budget development is a decentralized process with input from across the entire campus. It is an open and transparent process with full and complete disclosure. With those comments, I call on Regent Brody for the Finance and Budget Report.
Thank you, Chair Milliken. Thanks for those comments. Our first four items we could run through and technically in a consent agenda, but we have the audit, and I want to make that as a separate item. So finance and budget item one is the acceptance of the audit report and financial statements for the year ended June 30th, 2024. Is Susan Allen.
So, as the auditor was here at the October meeting, it was a clean audit, no audit adjustments, no audit findings, the best audit you can have. So, I'll take any questions. And we've got Ronaldo and our controller here that work really closely with our auditors if we have any specific questions.
Any questions or comments? If not, I entertain a motion to accept the auditor's report and financial statements for the year ended June 30th, 2024.
So moved.
Second.
A motion and second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? By like sign. Our second item is the approval of the 2024-25 Statement of Revenues and Expenditures.
So I'm not going to run through the whole presentation that we did the last time. I just think it's important to remind the board that this first quarter statement that we presented in October is favorable. And as I told Chair Brody just yesterday, it's hard to believe, but within probably 3 or 4 weeks, we'll have the second quarter under our belt. So we'll be sharing that with the board at our next meeting. But if you'll see, the margin increased nicely over the actuals from 24. Our revenue less expenditures, positive increase of $5.2 million. So.
Any other questions or comments? If not, I'd entertain a motion to accept for filing the Statement of Revenues and Expenditures for the 3 months ended September 30th, 2024 and
23.
So moved. Motion have a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Finance and Budget Item 3 is the acceptance of the line of credit renewal. Susan, any comments there?
No, this is just a regular housekeeping order of business. When I first came, we went about getting a line of credit. So the best time to get a line of credit is when you don't need a line of credit.
Yeah, that's right.
Because when you need one, it's difficult to get. So we have one in place. We've never tapped into it, but it's there as a safety net, and it's basically best practice for universities.
Any questions of Susan? If not, I'd entertain a motion to approve the board resolution for the line of credit with J.P. Morgan Chase Bank.
So moved.
Second. Motion made and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Item 4 is the approval of personnel actions.
So really nothing to say about that. It's a lengthy report. I think we do this once a year now versus every quarter. So nothing irregular in there. So any questions?
Any comment? If not, I'd entertain a motion that we approve the faculty and staff personnel act. Have a motion?
Motion.
Second. Second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Okay, we're to item 5.
Which I think is Bruce.
Bruce Wiseman.
So item number 5 is a proposed revision to the Board of Regents bylaws. I provided a brief description of that at the October meeting, and I'm happy to take any questions if anyone has.
Have any questions or comments before we vote on this change? If not, I would entertain a motion to approve the revised bylaws for the WKU Board of Regents as presented.
Second.
Motion and second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. I have an information item here, Susan.
So this is the information item on our first quarter interim statements. Just as a reminder to the board, we didn't bring these to you at the October Finance Committee because of timing. One of the things we talked about with the changes that I think you're going to talk about in executive session. It's difficult to close a quarter and the end of September, or it takes you a week or more, right, Amy and Ronaldo, to close the books and then to prepare the statements. It just wasn't feasible for us to get it done in October. So beyond the audit and everything else, changing banks and all that, the accounting staff with everything they have going on, I'm grateful to them for all they've done. And I'm here to go just in a high level with the with the statements. These are not audited. They're done in-house. But this, if you remember right, last year was the first year we presented quarterly statements. So we didn't have any comparative year. So now we do have 2 years. So you can compare this year to how we're doing last year. And so going to current assets, I think on your balance sheet, it's I think the most important thing that most accountants would focus in on is your cash. And so your current assets, our cash declined slightly over the previous year, about $6.3 million. That's directly related to, as a reminder, our performance in the prior fiscal year. We ended the year with a $6 million deficit, actually, I'm sorry, $4 million deficit, and which was an improvement from the prior year, a great improvement. And so when your performance is not what you want it to be, well, you will see a decline in your cash. The remaining between the difference in the four and the six is primarily capital expenditures, which we get reimbursed from the state. So receivables are typically a change related to timing, so nothing significant there. If you move on to non-current assets, the first item that I want to people look at that restricted cash and want to know why we don't include that in cash available for us to spend. That is, it's restricted cash for a reason. It's restricted. Those are cash from our bond sales, for specifically for the field house and press box project. And you'll see that we're drawing down on that as we're completing that project, the $42 million down to $35 million this year. So no significant changes to point out in assets. We went from $616 million in the prior year to $638 million. So nothing alarming there. Going on to your current liabilities. Increase in, I've got to always disclose, I'm not a CPA. There's a reason I'm not a CPA. I don't have my certified public accounting license. And so a lot of this is just accounting rules, as Chair Broderick will talk about. So the item that's the increase in unearned revenue due to timing, this is due to timing of accounting entries. And if you look at it, it's actually gone up in the unearned revenue, and that's because of the timing of when we receive our Pell grants and our CAP grants, and we recognize it as revenue, but we don't receive it until the prior quarter. So other than that, the long-term obligations, that's really a principal-only portion of your debt service payment. The reason you see the change there from $13 million down to $5 million, it was an estimate in the prior year. Reminder that the prior year was the first year that we did the quarterly statements. So they made Amy did a really good calculation for this year. So we're very confident with the $5.2 million this year. Moving on to the non-current liabilities and net position, I think the most important on this slide is the increase in net position. So one of the questions that I had prior to the board meeting was, Susan, is this one of these accounting entries? And no, I'm happy to say that this isn't. This is an actual increase in our net position, and it has to do with the increases in the capital projects and our capital assets across campus. So as we're building and improving our campus and our campus facilities, they're brand new, so there's no depreciation, so you're actually seeing a robust increase in our net position from $151 million up to $191 million. So that's a great financial marker for the university. So moving on to the income statement. You'll see that our operating revenues are down slightly from the prior. This goes back to, if those of you want to remember, the auditor's presentation on the calculation of net tuition revenue. So for our financial statements, GASB requires that we do it differently than when we do it, not just we, but all institutions calculate net tuition revenue. GASB requires that you include your Pell and CAP grants into the scholarship or your discount, and you don't typically put that in when you do your own calculation. So you'll see a slight decline in net tuition revenue, which you wouldn't see in my budget versus actual. This is your expenses and how it lines up by category for our financial statements. A couple of items I wanted to point out. You'll see an increase in institutional support, and that is directly related to the payment, the insurance payment, the increase in the state and tornado insurance. But the good news is, while it increased over $2 million, the state gave us the money to cover that increase. Secondly, there's also an increase in the operation and maintenance of plant, and that is directly related to all the capital projects that we have going on across the campus. So you'll see an operating loss, but once you factor in our non-operating revenues, so all of our state appropriations have increased nicely, and grants and contracts increasing nicely. So you'll see, once again, an increase in our net non-operating revenues from $54 million up to $72 million. So again, a nice increase in our net position. So that's what I have on the quarterly financial statements. And what I talked to Chair Brody about, I think what's important is as we move into upcoming board meetings, is how we can talk about the quarterly budget versus actual along with our financial statements now that we're doing those quarterly. I think they will marry together nicely, and so we can talk, and we've not had the opportunity to do that. So I'll work with Chair Brody on this going forward.
Thank you, and thank you all for your work on this, these statements. Any other questions or comments before we go over to Philip?
So I think one of the things that we struggle with is in the meeting and the way that we have this lined up, we have the feel-good side of academic affairs, and look at the, as Regent Bell said, the heart and soul of the university, of the faculty and the staff and the students. And then we turn to the finance side, and it's always these numbers, and it's, you know, if we talked in June, we were looking at the budget and realizing the budget year that we had and the cuts that we were looking across campus. I think your comment was it was you felt bad for people on campus, and I said something about how hard it's going to be. I think, you know, just taking a moment to reflect as we get about halfway through, and we haven't done those statements yet, we haven't closed out it has been a lot of work this year so far. There have been tremendous cuts, and I've seen that across. Also reflecting on the fact, and to get to where we are to see improvement in this, I want to make sure as we talk about, you know, there's 57 people who took a voluntary separation. You know, we continue to push on the financial side of things, and there's a lot of reasons for that, very good reasons. And as people talk about the budget on campus, understanding the pressures that we have. But I think it's very important that we as a board set the tone that we not lose the core of what we're doing if these cuts are taking place. And that was reinforced for me this last week when I walked by one of the retiring members, faculty members' offices, and I saw they'd thrown out their book of Start With Why. And if those of you have seen this book, and many of you have read it, if not, I've got a copy that I picked up off the shelf that she put out there for students. You know, the faculty are here to help students. And if somebody asked me recently, why do you do this job? It's like, I want to help students find their why. I want to help them figure out what they're doing. And I worry that we are turning the temperature up on too many budget cuts being made, short-term budget cuts, that are leading to us losing some of our strategic focus, that we're going to larger class sizes, that we're making choices that are not leading to the absolute best for students and for faculty success. So just, I'd like to make sure that we continue to emphasize, like Regent Bell said, that, you know, faculty are what we're trying to do here. If we're going to ask them to do more to get us to R2, if we're going to ask them to do those things, we still have to make sure that we keep the support there for them to be successful. And so, you know, as someone who's on both committees, I see the realities of both sides and understand why we're doing it. We have to have the leadership to say we're still going to be committed to the students, and the faculty support is a part of that student success. So
I guess I would say that every decision that's made out of academic affairs at this time is a decision based on making sure that students are successful. And the definition of successful that we use in academic affairs has to deal with graduation and helping them find a career as they move on from us. And if you look at the numbers, I think I agree with you that we've had to make some difficult cuts, but that was because I don't think you can run in the red forever, and you have to get to the black to be viable into the future for 20, 25, 30 years. But I think what we've seen is there's been a commitment when you talk about first-gen LLCs and things like that to make sure that the students who need help can find help on this campus. Are we perfect? Absolutely not. Do we have enough? Probably not, but the hope is as we move forward that this continues to be our focus, and it has been our focus since day one. And I think the fact that retention is almost at 80% and graduation is almost 60% is much better than it was 5 years ago, and that's the numbers that I think I look at when I'm trying to figure out if we're at least moving in the right direction. If we weren't moving those numbers, I'd be really, really disappointed, and I would struggle. And I know the faculty has taken a burden, and there's no doubt about it, and I will say that. But that's also the administration, too. All groups have, in a large number of cases, had to shrink a little or work a little harder and do that, but that's just higher education as we speak today.
Yeah, and I would absolutely say, and I've said this in some other forums as well, there is no office on this campus that has not had to retrench and refocus and take cuts, and I think the faculty are very much aware of that, and so I'm certainly not just speaking for the faculty. And as I have spoken to other people on the campus, outside of faculty, they're also like, we got to make sure we're still committed to the reason we're here and we don't lose our core, our mission of what we're doing. I'd also just, you know, the RAMP model, when it was adopted by the board, which predates me, we talked about the strategic reallocation of resources to areas of growth, and yet we're still doing a lot of across-the-board budget cuts, and that bothers me some. So
I'm glad you brought up RAMP, because one of the things that I inherited was colleges that had been growing in student population, and their budgets were staying the same. The colleges that were losing students and their budgets were staying the same. And one of the things we've tried to do is we've gone through reductions and right-sizing, as you call it, is ensure that we're protecting the areas that are growing and we're reinvesting in those areas. And areas that are struggling and not willing to adjust, they will continue to decrease. And so this is the world of higher education. And if you don't read the Chronicle or Inside Higher Education every morning, you may not understand how good we actually have it. There's a university just about 500 miles away from us in the middle of Ohio that's dealing with a year-over-year $38 million deficit that looks a lot like we did. And so the work that we've done to be fiscally conservative, to not find it acceptable to run in the red, and the work that we've done to have the budget crafted and created not by three people, but by our academic and staff communities and our leadership in a transparent way, for me, is how we continue to be successful. We've continued to make progress. The variance between revenue and expenditures continues to go down. And the goal is for us to have excess revenue. And I'm really proud and thankful of the work of leadership, not just administrative leadership, the work of academic leadership in the colleges, making hard choices, the work that have happened in departments. But you've got to pair that with the other work. And so we have areas of campus that are continuing to innovate and re-innovate. Dean Brown and his new department is exactly the way in which you don't just talk about declining revenue, you talk about growing revenue. And I think that's, Shane, as you say, the core mission of what we do is student success. The metrics speak for themselves. Are budgets tight? Sure, they're tight everywhere. But we're paying attention to them, reacting to them, and not putting our heads in the sand. And yet, student success continues to go up. Graduation rate continues to go up. Research productivity continues to go up. And I would argue that efficiency will continue. Has to. It's the world we live in. That we have to squeeze every drop of efficiency to help our students get to the finish line. And work is changing. And we have to figure out how we take advantage of every innovation, including AI, to make ourselves more efficient, to support every student. And at the end of the day, look around the country. Places like us are being squeezed. They're being squeezed because of declining enrollment. Well, why is enrollment declining? It's because 60% of the students who apply to college don't go.
that's not a recipe for economic success for our region or our nation. And so we have to continue to push on that, articulate the value proposition, at the same time as a community, celebrate what we've done and what we're doing. And, you know, it's not easy. The go-go days of the mid-90s all the way through the early aughts, that's over. And if you look at demographics and the future of this country, yeah, we're in the middle of the demographic cliff. But post-COVID, we're not even doing population replacement. We're at 1.7 now. So this feels hard. I'm going to preview for you what the next 15 years feels like. In 18 years after 2020, in 2038, we got a real problem as an industry. And so, yes, we're going to struggle through this, but we're going to learn from this so that we're ready for what comes after this, because it's not growing population. So I appreciate the comments, Shane. And
so I'd point out yesterday there was an article in the Chronicle that talked about the increasing mental health concerns amongst faculty and staff nationwide, since you were talking about the Chronicle. And again, it most of it drilled down on it is because of the increasing workload as the staff is coming down. So I wonder if, you know, one of the biggest strategic failures I see amongst organizations is as they make minor course adjustments because of, you think about them as a boat, as a ship, make minor course adjustments because they need to. If you're not careful, if you don't have good leadership, at some point you're going in the opposite direction. Somebody's got to keep us heading in the right direction. And I think we're all clear the right direction is faculty success, student success, and just making sure that we keep that in mind. And that's the main thing that I'm pushing towards here. I'd also just, you know, as you talk about AI, I got to watch Bruce's demonstration yesterday at Staff Senate. 2 days ago at Staff Senate, as he tried to have AI summarize a travel policy for us and take the place of one of our administrative assistants, I don't think it did a very good job. Mm-hmm. So AI has a ways to go before it can replace too many things. So,
it's coming.
Yeah.
Thank you all for your comments.
If I can, please. Ed, as someone that has now been here longer than anyone else, you know, I've seen major changes, certainly over the last 7 years, particularly in going back to Chair Milton's statement that he made with transparency, which has become a hackneyed term. I get tired of hearing that, but it was plain to see, it is plain to see, that all these changes in higher education have been coming and are here and more to come. But as far as this board being involved and trying to be transparent, I think we do a better job today than I've seen before. I think we strive to do a better job. And you go back, Bruce, to when you co-chaired the strategic planning process, my gosh, we involved every board member was on one of the committees, and it was a campus-wide process that involved.
How many people did we have on committees?
Almost 80 people.
Yeah, and so we have made an effort to not just every board member with the opportunity, but the responsibility to be involved in everything that's happened. And the transparency behind our curriculum process that we've changed, and not to mention the budget. And for any of us that read the book on the decentralized budget process, you know, we studied that, and we're involved and are involved in Susan and the work that she's done, and some of it. Much of it has been out of necessity to be not just one of the survivors, but success stories in higher education, which I think we are. So, anybody that doesn't think we've been transparent hadn't been paying attention.
I'd also follow up and say Susan and her staff are always responsive to me. And if I get a question from the campus community, I usually cut and paste it for anonymity and forward it to them, and I get a fantastic response that OPIC explains. So they're responsive and available And typically when I have meetings with the campus community, and I show them documents that are freely available on the webpage. They're not behind a paywall. They're right there. And people just didn't know they were there. So transparency versus not looking is different there.
Any other comments? Not Chair Milliken, that concludes finance and budget.
Thank you, Regent. Next item is